spring in Nebraska. You gotta love it as we welcome in Commissioner Weems. How you doing, Ken?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing better than I was a week ago.
Yeah, I tell you what, it's so good to see the both the Morrill and Cottonwood fires getting under control. Although there's hot spots, this thing's going to linger for quite a while, even when they get a so-called completely the perimeter contained. It's just wild how many acres have burned.
It is. It's over 800,000, I think.
Between the two.
Yeah. But Cottonwood's, I think, 98% contained as of this morning, something like that. And
I think it was 96 yesterday.
Yeah, so they're getting a little better. They're burning up fuel within the perimeter, a lot of that, and eliminating that, so there's not a chance of a flare-up. A windy day coming here, and we all know that there's a lot more to do. And
fire personnel.
Morrill fire, I think the Morrill fire is officially 100% contained, from what I'm told. So
okay.
I hope that's correct.
I saw 98 yesterday, but they might have
And I don't know
upgraded.
If that's official or not, but that's the estimate I had, was that they should be able to predict 100% today, and we'll see what happens.
You know, the perimeter of that Morrill fire is over 400 miles.
It's crazy.
You just follow the perimeter of it.
396 miles or something.
I mean, that's almost the whole length of the state of Nebraska if you stretched it out.
Commissioner Woodruff and I were in Ogallala yesterday for the confab with the governor and Secretary Rollins, Secretary Bagg, and Senator Ricketts, Senator Fisher,
Congressman Smith.
A lot of horsepower in that room, a lot of powerful people, influential people, and all putting their shoulder to the wheel, trying to move things forward for relief and get some of the bureaucracy out of the way so we can get supplies and funds to these producers so they can rebuild and continue on and maintain their cow herds.
That's the biggest thing, and with disasters, is just making sure you get access to every possible means. And you start with the county declaring an emergency, and then it goes to the state, the head of state, and get that declared an emergency. And then the governor talked about last week over in Brady, and I know you and Chris were over there, and I was over there taking video of it, but he talked about just cutting the red tape, and hopefully they'll get that done so these people that have suffered these devastating losses from the fires won't have to wait for the relief.
Yeah, that's always the problem. It's the timeliness or the lack thereof. And, when you need to take care of fences and get to purchase hay and sometimes in these drastic events, reposition cattle somewhere else, that costs out of pocket right now. And so one thing while we're talking about that is a reminder. In fact, we heard it yesterday and we heard it last week. Anyone that has been impacted that's spending money on rehabilitation, whether it be fencing or whatever it is, please keep your receipts. Keep those receipts for whatever you've spent money on. And as a mechanism moves forward, there should be an opportunity through either FSA, USDA, one of the agencies to do. We anticipate I'm hopeful there'll be some programs come out in the near future that'll say, here's a relief program. That was kind of what was intimated yesterday in Ogallala, with the follow-up meeting with the governor and our congressional delegation. But back to your question about Brady, the governor was out and obviously very concerned about the impact, and a lot of people were still very shell-shocked. We had a meeting in the fire hall, as you were there.
Yeah.
And most of that was first responders, but a lot of those folks are property owners. They have farms and ranches down there. So they're one and the same. And then after that discussion and some feedback as to what people needed immediately, and that's where the governor was focused. What do we need to do right now? What do you need? What resources can we provide that we're not? What glitches in communication? He was trying to go through the whole gamut of things. And, I give his office credit. There's a lot going on. And You know, cottonwood was absolutely devastating, 132,000.
Yeah.
And but on top of that, then you've got what, 640,000 in the Morrill fire. So, you know, the NEMA challenge, you know, Nebraska Emergency Management, this all hit them simultaneously, and so they're trying to scramble resources and reach out to, you know, the feds for, you know, their resources for fire equipment and aircraft and everything. So you can imagine it's a discombobulated process to some degree when it first starts, but it's amazing how quickly they brought all the resources to bear and then coordinated them between Cottonwood and Morrill, because Commissioner Bruns and I were being selfish, and we were, you know, we were petitioning people in the in Lincoln at the governor's level, his chief of staff, to say, hey, don't forget Cottonwood. Don't forget us. Where's our air support? Where are our ground relief guys? And not that we made a difference in that, but, you know, we did what anybody would do, is, you know, look out for our own constituents. And
sure,
we were pushing hard to make sure we didn't get left along the way and in the bigger Morrill event. And again, to their credit, Corey, you know, resources came to bear fairly quickly. And, you know, Mike Gruber is the longtime fire chief, and Brady. And on Friday, I was there with Brandon Myers, spent a good deal of time there on the weekend as well with them. And poor Mike sitting over there, I said, Mike, you look like you're absolutely fried. And he said, that's the right word. I'm so tired.
Most accurate term that he could come up with.
Those guys were just absolutely exhausted. So
Sunday
they relieved those guys with some state and federal people, you know, Forest Service and other entities that are part of that strike team, that SIM team that they assemble. And they've done this before. They sure know what they're doing. It does take time to get all the pieces in place, but man, once they go, there's some great equipment in there. And so They allowed these local fire guys to go home and get some sleep. And, you know, they're worried, so they don't really sleep. But at least they could go lay down for a while, close their eyes for a while. And they knew somebody was on the fire line. So, you know, a great relief in that respect. So, at any rate, you know, that was kind of the gist of what Governor Pillen had to say there in Brady, is, you know, we're here to listen. There was a lot of concern and consternation in the room, as I'm sure you knew, because, again, people were still kind of shell-shocked about, what do I do now? You know, I don't have any grass left. Maybe I lost my barn. I think we did have four or five homes that were either damaged or lost, and those are just unofficial. We don't know exactly. But the only positive is, Corey, that as far as losing homes, they were in the single digits. And it could have been a lot worse. The heroic efforts of the local fire guys and the reinforcements that came in on the SIM team worked tirelessly to keep those Jeffrey houses from going up. And was some touch and go stuff down there. Pretty hairy stuff.
Well, it's gonna be a lot of stories in years to come about harrowing incidents, I'm sure, and how close homes and property came.
Oh, absolutely.
Destroyed, but
so we hopefully can't thank those people enough. So I don't know if those percentages of containment are just guesstimations or not, but I think, like you say, I think 96 is official, so we'll wait to see. But I'm hopeful that that'll get to 98 or 100 and soon down there. But we don't know. You know, we don't know. But the gist of the challenge for those folks down there, as you might imagine, is this fire went so quickly that it jumped from canyon to canyon sometimes, and it left big pockets of fuel that didn't burn. And so that's what a lot of folks saw in the last five, 6 days, was those pockets being either intentionally lit or they just reignited on their own.
Yeah, with the warm temperatures.
Yeah, trying to get rid of that fuel, and I think they backlit some of those just to burn them up and not have to come back. And because you're going to probably see the SIM team, you know, they're typically a 2-week endeavor, and we're going to come up on 2 weeks here on Friday, Saturday, whenever that is, and days run together. But I think you'll probably, I anticipate with the progress, tremendous progress they've made on both fires. I think you'll probably see that team start to disband and they'll be sent home, because that's typically of what they would do. From what I'm told, I'm not an expert on this by any means, but you learn a lot when you sit and listen and to people that really know how this works. And according to what I'm told, Corey, that's kind of the MO on that. Typically, they run a 2-week cycle, and if some resources may, that, you know, they may be left in the area. There may be a transitional look to that, and I'm told that there's maybe some possibility that we're going to keep some aerial capabilities in the area. I think the governor referenced that yesterday, if I recall, in Ogallala as well. So we'll see how that goes. But, you know, they know they've done this many, many times, so they know not to pull back too quickly with all their resources if they're going to be necessary to keep things at bay. Mm-hmm. So I'm hopeful they will leave some equipment in the area and some staff those accordingly.
Before we touch on some of the business you dealt with yesterday, we want to give a shout-out to Michaela, I know, leading the Rotary group that's helping out at the fairgrounds with the firefighters, feeding the firefighters out there with the Hot Meals USA.
Yeah, Michaela Wheeler's she's a volunteer there with that group, member of that group, and they've been working tirelessly with Hot Meals, plural, hotmealsusa.org, .org, hotmealsusa.org, and there's a sign-up sheet in there. And they are woefully short on volunteers for the next few days. They've got 3 shifts a day. They process a whole bunch of food, portable meals here in North Platte at the fairgrounds, and then transfer those to Ogallala. I'm told a portion of them, of course. Mm-hmm. And they think maybe Thursday's their last day, but Michaela swung by and said, please put the word out. We need some volunteers. So if anybody's got the time and inclination, there's no more noble effort that you can participate in that, and that's a way to make a difference in this.
Well,
fire,
even
really.
even if you have a couple hours,
that's all it takes. You know, that's all it would take. I mean, you know, if you can come in and work for an hour or two, I'm sure they would say, "Great, you know, help us box these lunches and whatever, run in the line and relieve somebody else."
Just go out to the fairgrounds and.
I'm not sure about. I assume you can just go out there and find a sign up. Point, yeah. But if they want to do it online, too. They can. Yeah. You know, they can go to hotmealsusa.org.
Just go to that website. Last week, and they do have space, and they let you know how many people they need for each shift. So
yeah, that's been a gargantuan effort all by itself.
Yeah, it's amazing how those things come together to be able to feed, you know, this firefighting crew. And you know, they work tirelessly, and they come in, and I mean, that's a great thing if you can be able to meet their hunger needs too.
Oh, can you imagine how many calories you burn when you're out there with bunker gear? And
but you know, they're ravishly hungry,
and go from 98 to like you said, 28 or whatever day to day, and one day you're
crazy.
Heat exhaustion is your threat, and the next day you're freezing up your fingers and your hands are soaking wet.
Cannot imagine that, but
tough,
if you can help out, please do that and help them out. As far as meeting yesterday, it looks like the hot stuff, you discussed and considered waiving the fee for land use permit to rebuild structures affected by the fires.
Yeah, that's something they've done previously, and I think the Maxwell fire might be an example of that. But Judy Clark brought that to us, raised the awareness on that, and essentially because they have to go through planning to get a permit for a building or a home, of course.
Right.
She raised the awareness and said, hey, you know, we've done this in the past, and I don't know if it needs to be an official thing, but I'd like to be able to do this again. And and we unanimously agreed that, you know, it's a small thing we can do. I mean, you're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars of loss, and waiving a building fee of $50 or $100 is maybe not a lot, but it's at least we express our appreciation for their need, and we're empathize with that. We lost some shelter belt and fence in 2012 fire in the north end of the county, and mm-hmm. so you know I understand what that's like when you lose assets, and thank the Lord we didn't lose any buildings on that fire, but these folks that did in the Cottonwood, you know, like I said, if we can waive a fee for, you know, rebuilding a barn or a shed or a home, we're certainly going to do that.
So. Mm-hmm. And then dealing with the resolutions to adopt the Lincoln County Comprehensive Plan and zoning regulations, official zoning map, was this the second phase?
The second and final phase, and that's pretty typical when you adopt a resolution. You move on that, you take action on that, and then the subsequent mm-hmm. meeting, the final draft of the resolution is presented to the board to officially seal it and sign it.
Did you have any public comment on
no.
either of those yesterday?
No, in fact, that's typically, you know, your public hearing process has already occurred, and we didn't even actually have anybody in the room to speak to that. We only had one visitor on the public comment area. Early in the meeting, and when we came to that particular action item, Muriel Clark was there for the mm-hmm. representing the village of Sutherland that, mm-hmm. as an oversight. They wanted to be included in the economic development program that they mm-hmm. have and put it into Chapter 5 in our comp plan. And mm-hmm. Judy Clark assured her and us that we can go ahead and adopt that drawn up, and they can modify that in the near future, which we'll probably do to include that for Muriel. But other than that comment, we didn't have anybody in the room, Corey, that wanted to speak to any of those things.
So was it official, both resolutions for each of those were adopted then?
Yes.
Okay.
They were in fact, yes.
Okay. Is that the final action, or does it come back up on the agenda one more time?
No, it's now officially signed, sealed, and delivered.
Okay.
We literally signed it, and so hopefully we've got another decade that we don't have to delve into the comp plan and zoning regs to the extent we did here the last 3 years.
And are those posted on the county's website?
Yes, they should be a link for those. And the last time I was in Judy Clark's office a couple of weeks ago, 10 days ago, she had a whole stack of those if you want a printed copy. I think she's got the final draft mm-hmm. probably still over there. Anybody's interested in that, and if you have specific questions within that, you know, Judy's a quick reference. You don't have to go through all that material, pour through it, and try to decipher it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not into that kind of stuff and you're not a Philadelphia lawyer, you might not be able to read and interpret all those things.
Yeah, you probably need some
help. Judy can give you, Judy's real good about when people say, well, I'm thinking about doing this, what can you tell me about the process? What can you tell me about mm-hmm. what my limitations are? And I hate to, burden her more than she already is, but she's more than happy to say, well, what do you got going? What do you think you want to do? And she can really fast track, a couple, 3 minutes of feedback to whether or not that's viable, to do that on the property that you're perhaps referencing. So it's a good place to start, but.
Good to know. Discuss and consider waiving. Let's see, we discussed that. You had a couple of public hearings surrounding application. One, an application by Jeffrey and Robin Huffman for a conditional use permit to allow a wedding reception venue at 12401 West Island Road.
Yeah, that's a little bit east of Lieberg Field. I think it's actually between the river channel and the interstate. Jeff, he's a longtime producer down in that country there, and he and his wife are wanting to put in a little venue where they can provide, a rural setting. And, I think it's obviously pretty scenic out in there. And they had gone through planning and zoning commission, and Judy had reviewed it, and there was really no issues there. We granted that without much fanfare. Congratulated them on having another venue for people to take advantage of in the county.
Mm-hmm.
And they they were granted that, and again, it's you know, it's a plus. You know, it'll bring people into the community, and it can be utilized in many ways for all kinds of receptions or
sure.
what have you. But
good. And then another application by Neil and Cassandra Sundstrom for a conditional use permit to allow a small-scale campground with RV sites.
Yeah, that's a small. Neil and his wife are asking for a permit. We granted, of course, too, with after that public hearing. And I think the scope of it's maybe like 10 campsites or something. I don't remember exactly what Neil said, but didn't write it down. But it's you know, it's designed for self-contained campers, you know, so they'll not be any environmental issues. They'll have their own holding tanks, and they'll you know, come back to the park here in North Platte that has dump stations, or they'll game in parks out south or whatever. I think they used to have a dump station. I could be wrong, but so yeah, we granted that as well. You know, it's a formal process. They were both public hearings, so we opened the public hearing, and first we are presented with the evidence, and the evidence is the application, essentially, most generally. And so that's entered into the record, and then we open it up for public comment, you know, pro or con. We had no one speak to either one of these public hearings other than the applicants, and they were, you know, in my view, very non-controversial. And again, with the second one, another good little business venture for the Sundstroms, and why not? You know, this is actually, I think, south and east of Maxwell, that's great. You know, get people to come into the community, and whether they're there to participate in some other event like Nebraska Land Days, I don't know, but it's a venue where they can bring animals with them, and, you know, there's not a lot of those opportunities, and that's begun to be the big thing. If people are into camping and, you know, motorhoming and all that good stuff, and they all bring their puppies, their puppy dogs typically. And I think this is going to be puppy dog friendly from what Neil said. So it'll be another good venue in the county.
Good. You had an update by Dan Newton from the Lincoln County Sheriff's Office concerning purchase of sidearms.
Yeah, they... You know, this is well within their budget, and they manage that extremely well. The sheriff's just as frugal as the board is on expending monies. It's not a good deal. They don't do it. And Captain Dan was leading the charge here. They, you know, they carry what's called a Model 22 Glock. It's a 40 caliber sidearm, semi-automatic. And that's pretty much standard. The Glock itself, depending on some calibers, I think the PD runs a 9mm. But nevertheless, the Glock is pretty standard for law enforcement these days. And they were upgrading to kind of a holographic sight. It's a quick target sight that can be used in low light. And you have to have a combat rail type design or, you know, slide on those, or you can't take an old Glock. It's kind of difficult to convert to that. And the aggregate price on the Glocks were $429, and then they got $230 a piece for their trade-ins. I mean, that's an absolute bargain, $429. I bought a few Glocks in my day. And so they were just advising of this, and it was well under their budget for this upgrade, and it's not something they do every day, but you know, it was something that was needed for, you know, the safety of the officer, and you know, it's a more efficient weapon, a sidearm, and their biggest expense, quite honestly, will be having to upgrade their holsters to accommodate this holographic sight. But they were just coming over to say, hey, you know, here's what we're doing, so you don't freak out when you see this come across. But we complimented them on their frugality on the process, because they got a heck of a deal on those guns. And those Glocks will last them many, many years.
Then you went into your Board of Equalization mode and discussed and considered tax exemption applications on real and personal property.
Yeah, we had a myriad of those, and I did not bring the list. I didn't want to bore you to tears.
That's okay.
But Great Plains Health was the biggest entity that had the most amount of petitions for exemption. And we have denied a number of those that are off what we what we see as the main campus for the healthcare providing facility, which our council and our assessor view that as under the statute is, you know, that's kind of concrete, set in stone, so to speak. But the peripheral things that have evolved, not so cut and dried. And we've kind of challenged that. We've kind of pushed back because we've got a lot of private property owners, commercial property in North Platte, and they have to pay property tax. And we look at that as, you know, are we really being equitable here? Is this truly, you know, nonprofit? Is it truly directly centered to the health providing mantra of a nonprofit hospital? So we disagree with them that those are all integral to that. So again, we denied those. Mm-hmm. That is, by the way, from previous denials, still within TURC in Lincoln, the Tax Equalization Review Commission, and they have not adjudicated from the previous protests that Great Plains has filed, but it's basically the same parcels. So we just are simply holding our ground on that until TURC finally rules, and then that'll be the final word as to how those are treated as far as taxable.
Are you confident that's going to hold up then?
Well, I think it's a... I honestly, you know, I got a C- in law school. I've told you that before, so I'm not sure. But I can tell you this, that as a taxpayer or as a property owner, I'm empathetic. I should say I'm sympathetic because I've never been in the healthcare business. I'm sympathetic to the fact that, you know, they are philanthropic to a degree, but when you look at the way that is structured, it's a commercial enterprise in our view. I think collectively the board thinks that. And again, you've seen a lot of properties that get absorbed by hospital associations that come off the tax roll. And everyone else, including the residential taxpayer and the commercial property owners, have to absorb that. That comes from somewhere else. And we're just looking at fairness.
Well, I mean, you've got to make sure that your total tax collection, you know, provides for your budget.
We do, and
so the less that's assessed and exempt,
let me put it this way, the burden
on everyone else.
Let me say it this way, and I'm speaking for me. I think it's only fair that we challenge that question. We challenge that status quo. And if TURC tells us we're all wet, then we're all wet, okay, and we'll step away. But I think, as good stewards of property tax dollars and looking out for everyone who pays property tax, I think we have to challenge that and question that because typically people just say, well, okay, that's the way it is.
Yeah.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that. So we're going to find out and we'll move on. Life goes on. But I think a lot of us just felt like it was time to push back a little bit on that.
You discussed and considered animal control interlocal agreement with the City of North Platte.
We did, but it was an abbreviated conversation because Commissioner Woodruff left early since his district was impacted by the Cottonwood Fire, and he wanted to take in the full briefing in Ogallala, so he stepped out early.
Yeah.
Commissioner Hughley had a prior engagement, not anything affiliated with that, but he had to step away, so we ended up as Joe was leaving, we were finishing up the conversation on animal control, and we wanted a full board there to really have time to hash this through. Yep. But there's a lot of challenges there with some ambiguity on, you know, who pays for what. And, you know, in my view, this is my personal view, I think the animal control people in the city have been more than fair as far as the interlocal agreement. But we're going to have to spend a little more time, I guess, as I challenged the board that was there still yesterday, is we need to make a decision whether we're willing to absorb some of these expenses to do what, you know, to continue with the intent of what this was all designed to do, and that is not leave an animal along the road that's been hit by a car. And, you know, we determine who owns that animal sometimes later, but sometimes we never know. And that was the spirit of it, as I recall, some 7 years ago when I first remember talking about it with Commissioner Henry. And he was of the same opinion at the time that, well, you know, it's the right thing to do. And We don't want these animals to fall through the cracks, so to speak. Right. And so there's been some there's been some disagreement on who owed vet fees and who authorized vet fees and some things that we need to clean up there. But we've assigned Commissioner Hughley and Bruns to a subcommittee on that. Well, they're actually overlooking all the interlocals and reviewing them. And so I've challenged them that sooner than later they need to come back to us and kind of get some of those details hammered out so that we can go back to the city and say, okay, we're willing to re-up this. Because I think it benefits us greatly as far as rural animals that come in. And but the problem is, Corey, some of them come in, most of them come in with private citizens. You know, sheriff deputies aren't typically taking these animals to the pound. And so then there's where all the ambiguity comes and a lot of it. So anyway, that's, you know, we're kicking that can down the road here another week or two, but we're essentially working without an agreement at this point. And Chief Reeves has been good about just continuing on. So kudos to him for doing that. And, you know, they're a little bit, at this point, they're just saying, yeah, look, you know, you can sign it or you don't sign it. And life goes on for us, too. But I'm hopeful we can get some of the details figured out on that.
Did you discuss the other interlocal agreement between Keith County and Lincoln County?
We did.
Fire aid?
We did. I was I was almost glossied over that. We had such a long agenda and I had to circle back there. And went, oops, I forgot that one. But that was kind of a, I would say, a foregone conclusion because we had in the spirit of community assistance, we had already allowed some road personnel to help Keith County in the early stages of firebreak mitigation up there over the early part of the weekend and that first weekend of the event. And we made sure our highway superintendent was absolutely sure and adamant that he would not take any of our resources from the Brady District that could potentially be needed down there on that fire mitigation. So he took crews from the west side and sent them up there because they were short people. They had firemen who work, you know, on the road department and those kind of things. And you can imagine, same thing, they were exhausted. So we did that. We just kind of took an informal survey of all the board members, and it was unanimous, like, absolutely send them. The insurance part was, you know, checked on the insurance. There was no issues with that. Our insurance carrier said, no problem. Let them handle it. And so we did. So we formally signed that yesterday, just so it's now in writing. That we'll do it again, and they'll do it for us as well. If we need it, God willing, we don't need it again, and they don't either, but...
Good deal. Lincoln County Chairman of the Board of Commissioners, Kent Weems, has been our guest. Appreciate you stopping by and giving us the lowdown on what's happening.
Yeah, thanks, Corey. And don't forget the Meals USA, hotmeals, USA.org.
Yep, and sign up if you can, even if it's just a couple hours. They would be much appreciated. Your being able to help them out a little bit here as they help out the firefighters continuing to fight the Cottonwood fire.